Welcome to The Day with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead, and we are here again to have a conversation that matters. Today is part one of the three-part series on the MLK Project, where we're delving into the life and the legacy and the lessons we have learned from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Folks, I want to begin today by just calling out the students at the historic Samuel Coleridge Elementary School. I was sent a text from them this morning. The temperature in that building here in Baltimore City was 42 degrees in elementary school. So as we move forward and we're focusing on everything else that's happening, do not forget the babies. Some of them are still sitting in the cold. Now, folks, yesterday we celebrated what would have been Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 89th birthday. Dr. King is now one of the most beloved figures in American history, a man whose dream has been co-opted by this capitalist country. I have seen Dr. King's quotes on everything from t-shirts to pens, and now it's on tennis shoes. Nike released the Air Force One Equality Shoe. It's a black tennis shoe. It has the word equality on the back end, and there's a Dr. King quote, the infamous I Have a Dream little piece, hanging off of a tag, hanging off the side of the shoe. So we now have Dr. King's words on a tennis shoe. Here's a man who spoke out against capitalism. When he was assassinated, Dr. King was planning a poor people's march in Washington, D.C. He advocated a universal basic income that would raise everyone, whether it was someone who was economically challenged, an African American or Hispanic or white, raising them to the middle class level. And remember, folks, this was the late 1960s when the mostly white American middle class was at its high point and the rich were taxed at 70%. Dr. King said, we have come a long way in our understanding of human motivation and of the blind operation of our economic system. Now we realize that dislocations in the market operation of our economy and the prevalence of discrimination, it thrusts people into idleness. It binds them in constant and frequent unemployment against their will. Dr. King said that growth alone would not eliminate poverty. In addition to a basic income, he advocated that new forms of work that enhance the social good will have to be devised for those whom traditional jobs are not available. Here's a man who spoke out against the capitalist system, and now people are making money off of his words. When I saw this Nike tennis shoe, I was so disgusted. I actually said that unless they're giving these tennis shoes away for free, or unless they plan to donate all of the money from the sale of the tennis shoes to a good cause, then I am saying no way. We're not doing that. We're not supporting a tennis shoe that was actually done by Nike. Nike that has most of its factories in places like China, places like Taiwan, where they're paying people sub-poor income levels. You're talking children in these factories. Nike is releasing a tennis shoe that says equality. Now, I know that African-American athletes love Nike. I can think of a number of athletes at the top of my brain who love, who support, who are endorsing, who are wearing the Nike brand. I don't want to see Dr. King's words on it. Now, this thinking for Dr. King was not entirely new for him to be against capitalism. In his notes while he was in the seminary in the early 1950s, King actually made a penetrating critique of Marxism. He warned that capitalism has seen its best days in America, and not only in America, but in the entire world. Dr. King spoke out against racism and discrimination, as well as capitalism. See, folks, know that Dr. King, who says, I have a dream. Like, we know that Dr. King, kind of the grandfather figure who is peaceful, who's comfortable, who's been whitewashed. But is anyone recognizing the Dr. King who stood up against the system? The Dr. King who said that it is important for us to really be against what is happening in this system. Now, our president has informed us that he is the least racist person that we know. Well, I am not sure if you have to tell someone that you're the least racist person, if it actually means you're the least racist person. I think you don't have to tell people. If I'm not a racist, then I should not have to tell you that I'm the least racist person that you know. I was with Dr. Gwen Hassan this weekend, and she writes on culturally responsive instruction, and she made the best point. She said that I can call you a racist all day, every day, and if you're not a racist, then it won't bother you. It only bothers you when we get to hitting the nerve. Dr. King said, I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word. And though I'm going to say very honestly, I cannot with any complete accuracy, and I would argue that nobody can, tell you what Dr. King would do today, I do believe that he would not be on the side of Donald Trump, the least racist person that we know.
By the way, I am the least, just so you know, I am the least racist person. The least racist person that you've ever seen. The least. I am the least racist person that you've ever met, believe me. The least racist person.
No, I am the least racist person that you've ever met. And you can speak to Don King, who knows me very well. You can speak to so many different people.
19 days out from the election, you've been labeled a racist. You've been called a sexist. How do you respond to that?
I am the least racist person you've ever met.
Racism. The least racist person. In fact, we did very well relative to other people running as a Republican. Quiet, quiet, quiet.
I am the least racist person that you know. Now, folks, I think that there is something that is disturbing, that if a person has to tell you that he's racist or the least racist person that you know, if a person has to tell you that he's the least sexist person that you know, if a person has to tell you he's not mean like everyone says, if you have to tell me, then truly there's a problem there. There's a problem because this is who you are. Trump has told us more than once that he is the least racist person that we know, except we have seen in his behavior that he goes in a very different direction. He actually says things about people. He actually calls them all kinds of names. It is important for us to realize that when Donald Trump says who he is, when he shows us who he is, we have to be clear. The least racist person that we know. Take a listen to this.
But remember, all the times that this president, Donald Trump, has launched attacks against people of color.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
Look at my African American over here. Look at him. Are you the greatest?
This judge is giving us unfair rulings. Now I say why. Well, I'm building a wall, okay? And it's a wall between Mexico, not another country.
But he's not from Mexico.
In my opinion,
he's from Indiana.
He is his Mexican heritage, and he's very proud of it.
If you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She probably, maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say. You tell me.
You had some very bad people in that group, but you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
I would like to have him show his birth certificate. And can I be honest with you? I hope he can. Because if he can't, and if he wasn't born in this country, which is a real possibility, I'm not saying it happened, I'm saying it's a real possibility, much greater than I thought 2 or 3 weeks ago, then he has pulled one of the great cons in the history of politics.
Are you racist?
I am the least racist person that you have ever met. I am the least racist person.
The least racist person that we have ever met. This is a man who just a couple of days ago, folks, called Haiti and El Salvador and all of Africa, he called them S-hole countries, just a couple of days ago. And then he had the nerve and the audacity to sit and sign the Dr. King Proclamation, and then to stand up and speak on King's birthday. Let's take a listen to that clip. So, Donald Trump, in speaking up on Dr. King's birthday, and we will get that clip and we will play it for you, had the nerve to stand there as if he supported Dr. King's dream. As if Dr. King were alive today, he would be standing with Dr. King. Folks, we know that is not the truth. We understand that Donald Trump is not a supporter of Black people. No one can convince me any differently that Donald J. Trump, in all of his policies, is someone that supports what is happening within the Black and brown communities. So when he says he's the least racist person that we know, I'm just going to assume he's not talking to me directly, because I know some people who are not racist at all. Not the least racist, who are just not racist at all. And they don't have to convince me. They don't have to tell me. I can look at their actions and it speaks very loud to me. So, folks, that's where we are. We are dealing with the fact that Dr. King's dream has been co-opted. And I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think about that. Give me a call at 410-319-8888, because here on Today with Dr. K, the phone lines are always open. So yesterday, we celebrated Dr. King's birthday. And there's a moment where I always cringe when we begin to count down to the celebration. It's because I look out on the landscape and I see Dr. King's vision. I see Dr. King's dream. I see Dr. King's work get co-opted. I've seen it everywhere. And after a point, I'm starting to wonder if people actually know who Dr. King is, because I'm not sure if they know who he is. Now, I am not saying that I know exactly who Dr. King is. I'm not going to say that. I know his writings. I know his work. I know what he stood up for. I know what he was willing to die for. And all of that seems to be in complete contradiction with the way that we are framing him today. We are framing him as if he had no stances against this system. And Dr. King, when they asked him to run for president, Dr. King said no. Because one of the things that would have to happen if he ran for president is that the economic system would have to be dismantled. I think that's something that we need to think about. What does it mean to have a man who believes that the system needs to be dismantled before he could actually become the president of that country? People, I think, are not clear about who Dr. King was. I think they get caught up in I Have a Dream, and they're not looking at his later speeches. They're not looking at remaining awake during the Great Revolution. They're not looking at that one. They're not looking at his work with the Poor People's Campaign. They're not even reading the last speech that he ever wrote, Is America Going to Hell? Like, I think we need to take that unto serious advisement when we start talking about what King would support and what he wouldn't support. We have that Trump clip ready for you now. Let's take a listen to it.
That is what Reverend King preached all of his life, love. Love for each other, for neighbors, and for our fellow Americans. Dr. King's faith and his love for humanity led him and so many other heroes to courageously stand up for civil rights of African Americans. Today we celebrate Dr. King for standing up for the self-evident truth Americans hold so dear, that no matter what the color of our skin or the place of our birth, we are all created equal by God.
So, no matter the color of our skin, we are all created equal. That's interesting, folks. That was President Donald Trump speaking on Dr. King's birthday, that no matter the color of our skin, we are all created equal. I think if I were to pull people here, anyone from Haiti, anyone from El Salvador, anyone from the continent of Africa, anybody who is human conscious and woke would not be comfortable with Donald Trump telling us that we need to not judge people because he's the least racist person that we know. So we decided to reach out to try to get some facts behind this, because we're a little confused over here Today with Dr. K. I'm joined on the phone by Isaac Newton Ferris Jr. He's the nephew of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He's a senior fellow at the King Center and the former president and CEO of both the King Center and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, which is also known as SCLC. Mr. Ferris, thank you so much for joining me.
Pleasure to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you on to kind of enlighten us, because we are a bit confused about what the president is saying on one hand, right, with the S-hole comments, and then what he's doing on the other hand, standing up and then reminding us that King, you know, this whole idea was not judging people by the color of their skin, but the content of our character. Can you kind of shed some light on this, Mr. Ferris?
I can, but first I have to be honest. I've got to shed some light on what something you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply not true that my uncle didn't run for president because he felt the system needed to be dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't run for president because he didn't feel like he could be a politician, knowing that the art of politics is compromise. And there were just certain principles that he recognized that politicians need to do, and had no problems with politicians doing that. But he, as the moral conscience and leader of the nation, could not compromise on certain things. So it had nothing to do with dismantling the system, because he was dismantling the system by what he was doing. I mean, he dismantled segregation and was moving on to dismantle the economic issues. So I just wanted to clear that up.
I'm glad you did, because I've got my information from the Rolling Stone piece that was written where they interviewed him about this. So I'm glad you cleared it up, because apparently in that article, it says one thing, but you're enlightening us to something different. So I know that.
As a matter of fact, he came very close to doing it, even under those circumstances. The only reason why he considered it is because he thought that it might be an opportunity to raise issues before the nation. So he did flirt with the idea.
That's
but
what it's saying. Yes.
Decided that he. But I'm saying it wasn't because of dismantling the system, but it was because he knew, and he had no problems with politicians, because that's what a politician has to do. But he was not a politician. So there's just certain things that he could not compromise on. If you remember, that's what happened with Johnson, President
Absolutely.
Johnson.
Absolutely.
He betrayed him, because then my uncle's like, hey, we appreciate you signing the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act, but I still can't do, because you've done that. I can't justify you fighting the war in Vietnam.
Now, that's interesting. I'm agreeing with you, because your uncle truly, I would say he both was and still is this moral consciousness. I mean, when people talk about things, we do lift up Dr. King.
You can't be moral conscious if you want to compromise.
Right.
I mean, you just can't be it. So that's what that's about. Now, you were saying, and I didn't mean to, take up too much time.
No. You know what, Mr. Ferris? We are happy to have you on. Because when we start talking about Dr. King, we have a lot of people who are Dr. King scholars. You're a member of the family, so you have a specific position, and we want to hear that, as well as clarifying things. And I'm a little bit confused because I know, or this is what the newspaper said, you can tell me if it's wrong, that you said, and I have a quote here, that I personally don't think President Trump is a racist in traditional sense. I think that President Trump is racially uninformed or racially ignorant.
That is a correct quote.
Okay. Can you explain that? Because we see it kind of differently.
I can.
Okay.
The traditional definition of a racist that we were dealing with in the 60s was someone who based their opinion on someone else's humanity, meaning whether or not they're a human being or subhuman, based on their skin color or their culture. In other words, if you did not have white, if you did not share white skin, you were not even considered to be a true human being. That was the justification for slavery. These are not human beings. They're less than.
Mm-hmm.
That was the justification for Jim Crow and segregation. These are not human beings, so they don't even deserve and need to be in the same space with us. Donald Trump didn't say that Haitians weren't human beings. He said they're all uneducated, no skills. That's someone who doesn't know the facts. So, and I think it's important for where we're moving in the country, because we have to be able to have a conversation that we truly have not been able to have, which is a race conversation. The nation is changing. The demographics are changing. 15 years from now, white Americans, they will be the largest, but they will be a minority mm-hmm. in this country. Now, they'll be the largest group of minorities, something traditionally black Americans were. They will replace us. And I guess maybe now Hispanics, who currently, I think, have really surpassed us a bit. But white Americans will be a new minority in America. They know that better than you and I. That's why Donald Trump is president. Because the bottom line, and I don't know, I don't mean to speak for you, but I'm assuming that you have white friends like I have white friends.
Oh, I definitely do. I think they are aware.
Knowing your friends, I don't want to offend
right.
you, but I'm willing to bank on it that every white friend you and I know, pretty much, they won't admit it to us. They're not racist people. They are good.
That's how we're defining racism. Now, I want you to just kind of think about
it.
But you know, because we got to go to break. When we come back, because people are going to hold on and hear your comments, sir. I'm excited that you're here. When we come back, Mr. Ferris is going to help us understand this, and then we're going to open up the calls. I want to hear from you. Because Donald Trump, racist or racially uninformed or racially ignorant? This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Keep it here with us. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead, and we're actually talking about the legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and we're talking about the work now of Donald Trump. I'm speaking and I'm joined with Isaac Newton Ferris Jr. He's a nephew of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. He's a senior fellow at the King Center, former president and CEO of both the King Center and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Mr. Ferris, thank you so much for staying with us.
Sure.
So when we went to break, we were talking about Donald Trump being, as you said, racially ignorant. And looking at some of the things that he has said and done, are you really believing that the president of the United States is so unaware of racial policy and racial history that he's just kind of saying things because he doesn't know the true history? Is that what you mean by saying he's racially ignorant?
Well, that's a possibility of what I'm saying. I'm not in Donald Trump's head, so I can't say specifically. But what I feel is that, you know, it's possible that, you know, and some people would consider it. I wouldn't, because I think to be a racist is the lowest form of scum of the human race.
Absolutely agree with you.
But some people would say that there is one level lower, and that is that, you know, Donald Trump is not a racist and he knows what he's doing, meaning he's manipulating people. And I think that tends to be more of the deal, that you know, he, whatever you can say about him, his genius is in knowing how to market stuff, how to sell stuff. But I do think, Dr. K, that it is very possible and happens every day, not only with white people, but black people. Mm-hmm. It's possible for you to say and do racist things and not be a racist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
No. I'm just letting you lay it out. Yes, please. Go ahead. Yes.
And we all commit that faux pas, a lot of us, every day, and it's just not limited to white people. I think it's important, based on where we're moving to, that we're able to have that conversation. In terms of the things that Donald Trump says, there's no question that they're racist. I'm not defending what he says.
Okay.
But what I am trying to do is to get the Donald Trumps of the world to a point where we can dialogue so that I can point out to them the racism that they don't realize. They're stuck in a thing where, like, okay, I'm not a racist because I accept the fact that you're a fellow human being.
Now let me ask.
It's more complicated.
No, I know. I think it's a lot more complicated.
Just one last thing.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about systemic racism.
Yes, we do.
Systemic racism is racism that is so ingrained within the system. There's not a person actually that you can point to that's carrying out the racism. The system itself. So that in a sense, you've got racism taking place that people aren't directly making happen. Are they racist? No. It's racism, unfortunately, that's occurring because it's systemic, but it's not based on a racist heart.
I agree with you, Mr. Ferris. You're right that we do have systemic racism in this country. And even if it's not an individual, the system itself has been set up in such a way that it does apply unequally to people of color. I completely agree with that. But I'm thinking about the president and the power and platform that he has pushing forward these very divisive thoughts, actions, words, deeds, policy. That's a lot different than when I say it. All right. Even when you say it. That this man has a major platform and does set direction. I mean, that is the role of the president. Don't you think it's more concerning when it comes from that level than just somebody who's just kind of speaking and doing racist things that may happen in everyday life?
Yeah, I do, but I don't think it means that he's racist because it's coming from that level. It means that it's more influential, no question, but it doesn't change whether or not he's racist, and that's what I'm trying to get to, because the reason why he's president is because he speaks for so many non-racist whites.
Who are probably battling with racism in their heart.
Who would look at what he said about Haitian and Africa and say, well, it makes sense to me. He's saying is that we need to bring people here who have skills. Now, I'm not saying that that's not a non-racist statement. I know what that means, but they're white people because
who believe
they're
that.
White.
Yes. Yes,
and they don't have the culture and gone through what, you know, we've gone through. They might not understand how that within itself is racist. And that's all that I'm saying. You know, I'm not a Trump supporter or a Trump surrogate. But this guy has a way of looking at things that you have to take into account. Now, I'm telling you that I, you know, not defending him,
okay.
But I talked to people who were in the room. I mean, well, first off, you know, now there's a debate over what he said.
Right. Oh, yes. I've seen the debate. And I know, and I actually wasn't just talking about that one comment, you know, in terms of, I would not take just one comment. Right.
It really kind of all boils down.
Right.
I don't know what comments you're thinking of, but I've never heard Donald Trump say something like, even with the Muslim bans and Mexicans, I never heard him say, hey, you know, we really need to have, you know, separate facilities for people.
Right. I didn't hear the inactive Jim Crow, right?
Eating in restaurants with us and riding on the bus with us, and Mexicans shouldn't either. In fact, I'm not justifying at all.
Okay, because that's the way it sounds.
What he's talked about is, you know, Americans versus other people. Right? Mm-hmm. And in his mind, in Donald Trump's mind, he doesn't say it like this, but in his mind, when he thinks of American people, let's face it, he's thinking of white Americans.
Yes, he is. Now, there's something, but that's also, Mr. Ferris, and I want to ask you one more question, and, you know, Clarence, who's holding, I will get to you. Now we're getting to the heart of white supremacy, because white supremacy is this racist ideology that's based upon the belief that white people are superior to other people. So I'm just trying to figure out.
You don't think he's a white supremacist either? I don't think that he is saying that white people are superior to black people. If he were, I'd be saying, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's part of a racist doctrine.
Right.
He's not saying that. What Donald Trump is saying, that's why when he was saying to blacks, hey, you know, y'all ain't had a chance. You know,
yes, I've done more.
They educate y'all. They rob you of your money, the resources. You know, all you need is somebody to give you a hand. Why not trust me? Now, I'm saying George Wallace in the 60s would have been saying, hey, I could give y'all a hand, but y'all are so human and so dumb, you wouldn't know what to do with the hand.
Right.
I mean, there is a difference, is all that I'm trying to say. Now, is it right what he says? It is not.
It's white supremacist ideology.
We're not going to be able to show him where he's wrong starting out by calling him a racist, because he, first off, genuinely thinks that he is not. So he gets offended.
I noticed that.
Progress in this country that even racists don't want to admit to being racist.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, because I think people definitely want to talk. You were in the room when Donald Trump signed the proclamation for your uncle, correct?
As I've been with
completely understand that. I follow this as a national secretary for the Associated Study of African American Life and History. ASAL is often in that room, Carter G. Woodson's organization. Were you the only King family member in the room? Because I've read some things from your cousins who actually spoke out against Trump.
Yeah, I was the only King family member in the room, but as I was about to say, I wasn't about to state other organizations that were in the room. I'm saying this is something that happens every year.
Yes,
it's been happening
absolutely.
For the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So various family members, okay, I've not been at every one. Martin, Bernice, Dexter have not been at every one. We've all kind of traded off. This year, and it was disappointing, that the president only played golf on the King holiday.
Because nothing says I have a dream more than golf,
Monday,
right?
Mm-hmm. At the last minute, he changed the plan. If it had happened Monday, I would not have been there because I was scheduled somewhere else Monday, like other family members.
Right.
I was the only one available at the last minute change to be there. But there's always a family member there, regardless who the president is. Understand, I wasn't showing up, Dr. K, for him to sign a proclamation about, you know, Muslim bans.
Right. No, I get that.
Obamacare. Yeah. I mean, the guy that you're talking about who, you know, 2 days prior to that said what he said, you know, had to show up and stand next to me and negate what he supposedly said and declare that all people are created equal and should be respected.
I saw you in the pictures. We have some calls, Mr. Ferris. I want to get to them. We have Clarence on the line. Clarence, welcome to the show. Thank you for holding.
Hey, thank you for taking the call, Dr. K, and good afternoon to your guests. Dr. K, you used the words co-opted. Dr. King's message was co-opted. Now, Dr. K, in my personal opinion, it was willfully and with forethought suppressed by the people. Well, Black people are in the position where it's like the Pendragon, maybe not the Pendragon, but the dragon that's chasing his tail or the snake that's chasing his tail. We're on a roulette wheel. And the only number that the casino, the corporations, didn't rig it to come up with, the only number it wasn't supposed to hit was Barack Obama. And they white folks just went crazy. Now, when we look up at who's spinning the wheel, these are Black people spinning the wheel. These are Black people that are actually spinning the Ferris wheel, got us running around chasing our tails. Now, if Black folks had been fed a steady diet of Dr. King's message during the election cycle, Donald Trump would never be in the White House because they would have intuitively went for the right moral decision.
Mm.
Dr. King pointed as in all of his messages, there's a moral conviction there. We gave that away for political ideology. We will never, ever get out of this hole that we are in now unless we look inside of ourselves. And that's what I preach to the millennials. Don't be entrained. Just think and intuitively do what you think is right, as in Dr. King, you know, tried to instill in us. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Clarence. Mr. Ferris, I want to have you respond to that. So Clarence is saying that your uncle's message has not been co-opted. It's been willingly suppressed. What do you think? Are people very clear on what your uncle was talking about?
No, they're not clear. I mean, just look at the reaction that I got for doing what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. King would never refuse not to dialogue, be in dialogue with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he would say, I mean, if you read his 6 steps, that's part of the process.
Right, to have conversation.
You can't make change. You can't convert somebody if you don't talk to them. So this notion that everybody, what was he doing there next to him?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you came to talk about it.
I was representing my uncle's legacy, and trust me, contrary to what people said, he was smiling about it. But because I'm saying that's what you do. I mean, this is not about, you know, not dealing with people. You don't have to accept their flaws, you know, as proper. but you don't reject people. You know, you hate the sin and not the sinner. And so clearly they don't understand. But I do want to clear one thing that he referenced, because that's why I'm trying to do what I'm doing. The reality, we don't have the numbers. Every 100, we're going to have 100% black people to vote for Hillary, and Donald Trump would still be president.
They still would have won.
In fact, we didn't have the numbers to make Barack president.
No, we did not.
White people decided they would vote for a black person. It was not that, you know, black people delivered Barack Obama. We simply don't have the numbers.
We don't. Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. And we won't even have it soon.
Numbers.
No.
And we're not going to have the numbers.
No.
Without being in coalition with whites. Okay.
And that will give us numbers with allies, with whites, and also, let's not forget, Mr. Ferris, with Hispanics. When you start talking about
how the white race is becoming the minority,
the majority is going to be white Hispanic origin. So we're talking about allyship.
That's right. That's correct. So I'm just saying, you know, there's more racial progress we need for black people.
Right. Well, let me get you some more calls.
Go ahead, sir. Americans, they're not going to admit it, but they're like, we ain't doing nothing more. We've done enough. I mean, who's looking out for us?
There's a large swath of the white population who truly believe that they were in need of a savior, that what they were having was being lost, and Donald Trump promised them in so many words, I'm going to make sure that your interests are placed on the table. I mean, one of the things my producer noted is that Obama, you know, when he woke up young people who didn't vote, Trump woke up a lot of older white people who didn't vote, of all races, who came out to support what he was saying. Like, you don't want to lose everything you have, and I'm going to make sure that you don't lose it. I mean, that is his base, and they are supporting him.
But I want you to understand that it's all levels. See, a rich white person, a millionaire, say, is not necessarily walking around worried about, you know, okay, social stuff.
Right.
Because, I mean, they have resources, right? So they figure, you know, they can get their health care that they need. They can get what
right.
they need. So
right.
they're not worried. But let me tell you what worries them. And this is why this is universal among our white friends. You probably realize, but most people realize, we don't even have an official language in this country.
Absolutely. And I hear people talk about that all the time.
And so, but we're getting ready to have a majority that speaks another language.
And
we live in a country where majority rules.
Yes.
So does that mean that we could wake up one day and Spanish is the official language of America?
And people are afraid of that. I get that.
I know.
I know. I get what you're saying.
If that's what we decide, that would be fine, because one of the things that we have to do moving forward, because the day is over now where you can look at somebody and determine whether or not they're American or
not. Right.
Okay?
Right.
We got people walking around in burkas and everything. Okay? This is America. Everybody is here.
We want to just note that that is one of the beautiful things, though, right? We're not a melting pot. We are a quilt. The people stand their individuality. And I am right with you, the idea that people are afraid. California tries to do it every year. California is always trying to vote in an official language because we don't have one in this country. Like, that is an important point.
And the reason why we need one is because now it's a beautiful thing, like you just said. You can't identify American by looking
at
it.
No, you cannot.
We got everything here, and we've embraced everything. So what's the common denominator, though, that ties us together?
And right now it's language. I mean, it's speaking. Let's be, but depending upon where you are. You know what I'm thinking about, Mr. Ferris? I'm thinking about going into Washington, D.C. If I go down to Chinatown, that is the official name of that area in D.C. If I go out to California and they have huge Hispanic neighborhoods, that there are places that you're walking through, we start talking about what the language is. So sometimes I'm sitting there saying, you know, I actually need to figure out how to navigate through. And I'm not in any way saying it from a negative thing. I'm just saying that's where we are as this wonderful country now.
And listen, I'm not saying people should not retain knowledge of other languages if that's what they and speak it in their homes or whatever. But I'm saying we need to have one language that unifies us all, if that be that English, Spanish, or whatever, because we need to be able to have a tangible thing that says, I'm an American. because it's no longer you know, blonde blue eyes makes you American.
No, it does not. And that's okay. Not been for a while.
I'm saying that day is over. And so, like I said, you can look up and burkas are washing, people in burkas. And
who are Americans, right. I'm agreeing with you.
I'm just saying, so we look like everything now. So what is that deal?
What is okay? it? I think that Mr. Ferris is definitely worthy of a conversation on the show. When you start talking about, you know, moving to one language, you know, actually making it official that English is the language of this country, because we don't have that. I want to get to a couple other calls, Mr. Ferris, before you have to go. I have June on the line. June, welcome to the show.
Hello, how you doing?
And I was told you're a new caller.
Yes, I am.
And I always ring the bell and say, welcome to the family. Yes, sir. We have Mr. Ferris on the line, the nephew of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You have a question, sir?
Yes. To him, everything, what he's saying, and, you know, from what's being said about that word about the shithole, about the immigrants. Okay.
Well, remember, we don't say the word. Just say S-hole, please. But go ahead. We get it. Go ahead, sir.
All right. It kind of bothered me because I feel as though that why would any president would say those type of things in regard to with how people live or where they're at? Now, when I look at Barack Obama, who was a president that was for many people, mm-hmm. regardless of, you know, his legacy and how he did things, but if that word was ever touched by him or said by him, we would be in a different era right now. We'd be looking at impeachment. You know, right off the bat.
Uh-huh.
You know, because
if Donald Trump, if Barack Obama had made that comment about S-holes, you're saying we would have impeached him. Because let's remember, if we enact the 25th Amendment, we actually don't impeach him. We push the pressure up towards Congress, the elected officials, the vice president, right. to enact the 25th Amendment. So we actually don't do that. But you're saying they would have been moving in that direction. Okay.
But what I'm saying is they would have been right now. We have to move this man, move this president out of office. Of the type of language and words that he said,
mm-hmm.
you know, when Donald Trump talked about Mexicans being, you know, rapists and this and that. I mean, what president would say these things, knowing that you're the president of the United States,
right?
You know, and why would you curve yourself like that, knowing that you have the world in your hands? It's a spotlight on you,
right?
So when they look up to you to do things the right way, you're doing things the way how you see it to be done. Whereas all that, you have an audience that's looking at you to bring people out of poverty, to bring jobs to America, to make things great again.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm going to stop you there, June. We have a number of callers, but I want Mr. Ferris to respond. Mr. Ferris, so June is making the argument that if Barack Obama had said some of the same things, calling Mexicans rapists, even the S-hole comment, that we would have moved to impeachment. Are we, as a society, giving Donald Trump too much leeway? I mean, he's doing a number of things that are offending everyone, but he remains our president, and he continues to move forward.
I personally think, that we've given him some leeway that shouldn't be there, but I think that's the key. I mean, I would remind the caller that all of these things he said during the campaign,
mm-hmm.
not after he became president.
Right. But that doesn't mean he's changed, right? It doesn't mean his ideas have changed, though. He's just not saying them, right?
Right. I didn't hear what you said.
I would say it doesn't mean his heart has changed on these issues. He's just not saying them now, right?
No, I'm not saying it, but I'm saying he said these things when he was running and he still was elected.
Right.
And so what I'm trying to say is everybody's focused on Trump, but what I'm really focused on is the American people.
Right.
And I'm saying the American people, a lot of white Americans who voted for Barack Obama twice.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. voted for this guy. So in light of all of this, what is it saying to us is all that I'm saying, and that's what we have to address. It doesn't mean that we have to accept, but we have to address, and the only way we can address it is by getting people in a dialogue.
Right.
I would remind everybody that the Civil Rights Bill, the Voting Rights Act, the housing legislation all happened with a total of 5 black congressmen among 400 plus congressmen and senators.
There was pressure
to
do
black
that. Yes.
Senators.
I think that's important to know.
White Americans have to continue to be a part in order for us as black Americans to make further progress. especially on the systemic stuff.
Now, let me ask you this. Are you having, Mr. Ferris, are you having that dialogue with Donald Trump? Like, you're in the room, proclamation's being signed, you're pushing for all of this dialogue. Are you in dialogue with the president at this moment around these issues?
I will say this. The cameras showed the proclamation signing and the ceremony. They did not show the 30-minute meeting that myself, President Trump, Vice President Pence, and Secretary Ben Carson were in. And I don't want to get into all of the details of that because it will be difficult for me. For instance, me saying that he was racially ignorant
which
was the polite public thing to say as opposed to what I said to him in private. One, because, I mean, you know, you don't broach without other buy-in from everybody else who's in the meeting going out talking about what was talking. Two, you want to keep the confidence of the people so that they feel like they can open up to you and you're not going to go out and replay stuff. And then fourthly, so that the dialogue can continue. A brief example of where I discovered I was racially ignorant. Because of me pressing the issue, because I was leading the conversation. Understand, I grew up going to the White House. So I wasn't in there sucking up, oh, my God, I'm in the Oval Office.
No, no, we expect you to do exactly what you said you're doing. Right.
Okay, so I wasn't in there sucking up to the president. And because I was pressing the issue, one thing came out that the three of us, the president, vice president, and myself, were racially ignorant about.
And what was that?
You know, Ben Carson informed us that there's studies out there, apparently, that say that the group of highest educated immigrants in America are Nigerians.
Yes.
Yes. Now, I didn't know that. Maybe
you knew it. I did know that. And I went and looked it up. Yes.
I thought it was Asian.
No, it's not. It's Nigerians.
I'm talking about the those things.
HBCUs?
HBCUs and Silicon Valley and all the tech companies, one that's always around Asians, you know, getting them.
Well, not HBCUs, because those are historically black colleges and universities. But I want to go back to the comment you made earlier in a little bit of time that we have left. You said that when you stated publicly that Donald Trump was racially ignorant, that was the polite thing to say. That's not what you said to him in private. So I know you're not going to tell us that, but exactly what happened that led you to saying, you know what, you probably called him what I typically call him. Because racially ignorant, if that's the nice way, I can only imagine what you really called him. What happened to make you call him that? What did he say?
Well, I'm saying I don't want to really get into that specifically, but listen, let me generalize.
Come on, give me a little bit. Give me a little bit. Did you at least generalize it for us?
I mean, generally he expressed to me one that he did not say it, and those were not his sentiments, and you know, there were some other comments, and before the meeting, there were staff people saying things to me. He looks at things in a different way, and clearly, he was looking at it like from ignorance, like, okay, Haiti, I mean, you know, Haiti's a broke-down country. I mean, they ain't got nothing. You know, their people don't have anything to offer. I mean, I'm just saying.
I know what you're saying. This is where we are. Now, Mr. Ferris, I'm going to have to stop you there. I will tell you that I have enjoyed talking to you, and I would like to invite you to come back on our show because we need to do a part two, sir.
Okay.
Because I feel like we're just getting started here.
Just let me know.
I definitely will. Folks, that was Isaac Newton Ferris Jr. He's a nephew of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., a senior fellow at the King Center, former president and CEO of both the King Center and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. We are agreeing to disagree. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay tuned for a quick update from MTA.
Good afternoon. Taking a look at MTA systems. We have on the mark trains right now, on-time service on the Penn, Camden, and Brunswick lines. Light Rail Link is on schedule. Metrolink is also on time. And on the Local Link buses, the Blue Line and 80 bus southbound. The Brown Line eastbound is diverting at Bel Air and Dunfield for a water main break repair. The 53 bus northbound diverting at the Alameda and Cold Spring. And the 53 southbound diverting at the Alameda and Woodbourne. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Kirk Kroenke on 88.9 FM, WEAA, the voice of the community.